to the circle for presence. What I'd like to do is open with a blessing, and we'll take it from there. Okay? So what I'd like to do is just invite my guides in, and the support of whatever energies around us, all of us, to come in and be with us all here today, because partly what this is about is to help us to be present, to be right here, right now. So I'm hoping that whatever support we're getting from other dimensions, and I'll be talking about that in a little bit too, because I've had lots of questions about that, is that the help and the support that we get is to let things just fall away and allow ourselves to be right here, right now. Okay? Big deep breath. And when you breathe out, drop your shoulders and just let it soften. Let your body soften. Check in with the back of your head, your neck, your shoulders, your upper back, your hips. Drop your arms. Just relax. And be here. Be just a woman or a man sitting in a chair. That's it. That's all we gotta do. Okay. Real quick, when I talk about other dimensions, I know that for some people that's really kind of like out there, woo-woo, confusing, bizarre, alien. And when I'm talking about other dimensions, what I'm talking about is the dimensions that get talked about in quantum physics. Okay? So they're real. They're very real. And what they know for certain is that we live in the third dimension. Okay? And this is where we have this physical, what I call the meat suit, and we come here to Disney Earth to, you know, have all our adventures, right? They're all adventures, right? Some of them are a little scary and piss you off and, you know, even hurt a bit, but they're adventures. That's what we signed up for. All right. But there's lots of other dimensions. There's dimensions before that, and there's dimensions after that. And the thing is that they're not somewhere else. They're all right here. So, for example, when I've talked about past lives, the whole thing around past lives is about, we call them past lives, but we're using a linear word because in third dimension, we talk about past, present, and future, right? So it's linear, but there's really no such thing. You know, quantum physics has proven that space-time is a completely different thing than what we think it is. We set it up the way we have because it's what we need in order to function here. So it's a necessity. But we get too caught up in it, and we think it's very, very real. And so, you know, we get all serious about where we have to be when and dialing everything in so it happens at precise times and all that other stuff. And bottom line is, it's what we've created in order to be able to function here. But with past lives, it's more like instead of on a horizon where there's past to present to future, it's more like this. It's vertical. And they're all happening at the same time. And until I mentioned your little baby toe on your left foot, you weren't thinking about it, were you? Till now. But until this moment when I said it, did it not exist or did it exist? It was there. You just weren't conscious of it, nor were you focusing your attention on it. Okay? Well, the past life thing is very much like that. Okay, set that aside, because I don't want to go off too much into that. But I wanted to address it a little bit because of the email questions I've been getting around every now and then when I talk about different dimensions and this and that and the other. And to me, those things are natural and just part of what we all are dealing with all the time, whether we're aware of it or not. But I also know that for folks that are new to that language, that can sound really bizarre. And I even had one person email me and ask me if I was on drugs. I loved that. I responded, no, I've been clean and sober for over 30 years now. But I understand, and I wrote back, I understand where you might think that. Because, you know, from that person's perspective and their experience in the world, maybe only people that have done really big drugs and a lot of them have been able to trip the light fantastic into other dimensions. we won't go down that rabbit hole. one of my favorite teachers, Ram Dass. I mean, that's what they did. Richard Alpert and Timothy O'Leary, that's what they were doing. They were trying to stretch out of this consciousness and look at other levels of that. So another discussion for over tea sometime. Okay. So, but tonight, what I kept getting in meditation to talk about is the whole, and this is really kind of a mouthful to talk about in a short setting, but I'm going to plant it out there, and then we're going to do our meditation, and then we'll dive into it. But I want to plant it before meditation tonight, because I want you to just kind of have some awareness around what might come up around this subject for you, so that it's kind of like tilling the soil, you know, and throwing the seeds out and then seeing what comes up. That's kind of what I'm doing. So I'm going to be talking about the past and future thing, because most of us, most human beings, not even just this secular culture, but most human beings on the planet are either in the past or in the future. They are not present 98% of the time. Even when we think we are, we're not. Okay? And the way I'm going to approach it is we're either in memory or in anticipation. Okay? So a whole kind of another level to kind of look at this with. And we're going to approach some other areas of that in some different ways too. But today's going to be kind of fun. So what we're going to do now is a silent meditation. And what that's about is you get to either sit in your chair or go somewhere else in the room if you want to be on the floor. And I'm going to use this quartz crystal bowl, which is attuned to the crown chakra, which is our connection to divine energy, to start us. And after 15 minutes, I will sound it again so that you will know we're at the end of our 15 minutes. For those of you that have never done silent meditation before, the idea, the practice is to try and experience this, the mind, the voice of the ego being quiet. So it's really kind of like trying to herd cats or get a whole bunch of 3-year-olds to do the Swan Lake Ballet. And when you haven't had practice at it, that's what it feels like. You'll get frustrated. And frustration is a form of resistance. So I would like to suggest to you to not resist it. The voices are there, just notice them and go back to doing one of three things. Focus on your breath, and focus on whether you're inhaling or exhaling. Inhaling or exhaling. Pay attention to your abdomen as you do this, because it will rise and fall, hopefully, as you're breathing. Okay? If that doesn't work for you, pay attention to your senses, particularly hearing. If what I, in open eye meditations, what I'll do is just scan wherever I'm at, and I just notice shape, color, texture, size. If your mind starts to label it and name it, then you don't want that. Okay? So close your eyes and listen to sounds. And listen to the layers of sound that as you get more and more focused that you can hear. Okay? If that doesn't work, pretend you're a cat sitting in a mouse hole waiting for that mouse to come out. But what you're doing is waiting for the next thought. And that usually does a pretty good job of quieting it down, believe it or not. So that's three things you can give a try. So, okay, let's go ahead and get quiet. Okay. I can see some of you are back. And it's okay if you're not. Just be wherever you are. Okay. The whole thing with past or future, and another way to look at that is memory or anticipation. Because up here, that's where we are most of the time. If you think about that, isn't that where we're at most of the time? I mean, even if it was 5 seconds ago. I love to use, as an example, I got to be careful of this too, because the last time that I used something as an example, over and over and over and over and over, I created it. And it was not really the best thing that I could have created. I mean, I really am working on creating things that I want to have happen. And I used to talk about how in non-resistance I would use the example of being, you know, because people got confused about, well, if I'm not resisting, then what? I don't do anything. I don't change anything. And so I would use the example of getting stuck in the mud at night in the rain as an example of, so what? Non-resistance mean you just sit there and do nothing? No, it means you just don't react with any kind of emotion. There's no need to. You're totally in the present moment. You're totally right here, right now. Oh, I'm stuck in the mud. What do I need to do now? Getting angry, getting upset, feeling like the victim, blah, 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 all that. Well, consequently, I got stuck in the mud at night in the rain. And it was rich. It was wonderful. So, in fact, you can go on my website and listen to the April 16th Circle for Presence because I talked about it. I shared it in there, so I won't share it now. So I want to be careful with this. But traffic is just one of those examples that we can all look at and we have that experience of control, of not being able to let go, not surrendering, having lots of resistance, lots of attachment to how it's supposed to be, lots of judgment of other people. And that will keep us bouncing literally between memory and anticipation. So there's anticipation about how we expect this to go. And like, for example, I will anticipate it's going to take me 20 minutes to drive to a certain address in Portland. And so I'm thinking ahead, and in my thinking ahead, I'm not paying attention to the time, And I end up leaving, say, 5 or 6 minutes late. So I go, that's not that big a deal, right? And all it takes is the bridge going up or an accident where it's not really blocking traffic, but the looky-loo's got to check it out, and so everything slows way down. And, you know, who knows? Who knows what? I mean, the sun is shining, it's not shining, it's raining, it's snowing, it doesn't matter. In all kinds of weather and all kinds of circumstances, we've experienced traffic problems, right? And then instead of going, oh, okay, I'm supposed to slow down here. And it was because of my own choices, my own neglect of present moment, that I left later than I intended. So possibly I'm supposed to be late for whatever reason. You know, if I trust that everything has a reason, right? Even stuff that I don't ever get to really know why, what the reason was, there's a reason. Okay? So obviously if I'm going to be late, then I'm going to be late. Getting all wound up, all anxious, letting my blood pressure go up, letting, you know, physiologically what happens to us is that for those of you that have that vanity streak and you're trying to figure out how not to age, learning this stuff is really good because all that stress, all that living in memory or anticipation creates inflammation to the physical body, and inflammation causes aging. So if for no other reason than not wanting to age or age as quickly, you know, there's a reason, right? You could use that. So memory can be anything, and I'm driving down the road and some guy cut me off and I'm now a block ahead. Say 30 seconds now have gone by, but where am I? I'm still back here where that guy cut me off. And let's add insult to injury. He cut me off and flipped me off. Like I was in his way, because I've heard lots of people talk about that experience. So you feel doubly victimized somehow. And so in that moment, even though you're still driving this vehicle, how much does the average car weigh? Does anybody know? Got a guesstimate? 500,000 pounds? 3,200 pounds? Okay. That's a lot of metal and other stuff, you know, to be barreling down the road at 60 miles an hour and not even be present when you think about it, you know? So one of the things that happens in that process is that now if anything is happening up front here that you need to be paying attention to, you're not catching it till the last second, if you're lucky to catch it at the last second. I think a lot of times accidents happen because people are not present. They're just not present. And how many times have people have said, I mean, I've been in fender benders where I sat, and it's been a long time, but I have, you know, bounced into something, and it was like, oh, God, I just had so many things on my mind. You know, and that's what that is. I was not present. I was allowing the voice of the ego to run me all over everywhere about every other thing except what I was doing in the moment, which was driving this huge piece of metal down the road. Okay? So that would be one way to look at it. Anybody ever find themselves in the shower having a discussion? And let's just say it's a discussion. It could go as far as an argument, but we'll say just a discussion with somebody from your past. It might have been yesterday. It might be your spouse that's still there in the house. You know, they're in the kitchen, you're in the shower, you just exchange some words, and you're in the shower, and you're going, yeah, well, and of course, you know, that's when I always hear people tell me, and of course, I never think of the right words to say except for when they're not there afterwards. And I'm going, and who are you talking to when this happens? So there again, another example of we're in memory. We're in the past. past, we are not present. That's memory. The only way the past lives is in memory, which doesn't really exist, does it? It's not here. Okay, so let's jump to anticipation. And there's lots to get anticipated over. I am really, my focus the last, say, 6 months, I've been really trying and failing 50% of the time. But that's what practice is. You just keep practicing and keep practicing, and you raise the awareness more and you keep practicing. And that is when I have something that I'm, listen to the words, looking forward to. And so I go there, and if I go there, I'm not here. And so it's almost like the present now becomes nothing more than a means to an end, to get me there. But then once I get there, I'm not there, because now I'm looking forward to something else, or in my anticipation, and how I kind of dreamt up the way it was supposed to be, you know, the fantasies we have in our heads. You know, I imagine that, oh, when this happens, this is going to happen, and this is going to happen, and oh, this and that and the other thing. And then here it comes finally, and none of that happens. And I'm disappointed. I'm pissed off. I'm irritated. I'm sad, or I feel hurt. I take it personal, whatever. Okay? And all of that has to do now, I'm going to really mess with you, memory that I have of my fantasy. So do you see what the ego is doing to you? You are just this little ping pong ball. And the ego has just fragmented itself and gone ding, 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 back and forth, to where that's where, especially in a secular society, meaning not spiritual, we don't talk about religion or spirituality, and there really is a big difference between the two, and I am definitely in the spiritual end, not the religious end. But back in the day, we're talking centuries ago, okay, one of my other lives, the way people lived their lives were a whole lot different, because they were religious based, but they were also very spiritual based in a lot of ways. Okay? So that what happens is there was more reason to understand things like there's a reason for everything that happens, and to slow down and to take your time with stuff. Now, did that happen all the time with everybody? No, absolutely not. But I think there was more of an opportunity for it to happen then, because when you live in a secular society, we have completely shut down the right brain. We don't trust our intuition. We don't trust other people's intuition. Although I think it's really interesting that this 900 call up a psychic is, you know, they make a lot of money. So people are still reaching out there looking for those answers when they don't realize the answers are within themselves. And we just don't know how to access it, because we're not in a culture that teaches us how to do that. We're in a culture that teaches us that's unacceptable, that's not okay, don't trust what you feel, don't listen to it, don't pay attention to it. And if you grew up in a dysfunctional family, you definitely learned the three rules of don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. And part of the don't trust is you don't just not trust other people, you don't trust yourself. Most of all, you do not trust yourself. Okay? One of the things I experienced last summer when I was in Indonesia was, and I think I shared this once in here before, and that was, when we left the airport, it was the traffic was insane. And I don't mean the number of vehicles so much as I mean the way they were driving was insane to what my experience was here. Okay? You know the little 250 motorcycles? You don't see many of them on the street here even. You know, you see them out back in trails and stuff, but not Okay, 50 million of those. And that was the family car. Dad's driving. He's got a little kid in front of him. Mom's behind him, and they got a baby sandwiched in between them. They may have a helmet or two on the foreheads. They may not. And mom's got a huge backpack on her back that sometimes is sticking out this far on both sides. And they're doing this. And I mean, they're all over the place. Okay, set that little thought aside. I'm going to paint a picture for you here. Now, they have dogs over there. And they're all different colors and sizes, but they all look the same. So I asked Jess, our driver, you know, what kind of a dog is that? And he goes, oh, those are Bali dogs. We were on Bali, so I guess, you know. Okay, if we were in Jakarta, there have been Jakarta dogs, I guess. I don't know. But, okay, Bali dogs. And they were everywhere, and apparently dogs are sacred. And so this part I didn't fully understand. They were free to go anywhere they wanted, anytime they wanted. Nobody harmed them, but also most of them nobody took care of. 50 people that year on the island of Bali alone died from rabies, from bites from dogs. So that's another aside thing. But so these dogs were everywhere, in and out of traffic, as well as chickens. And I mean, even on the highways where people are doing 50, 60 miles an hour. And so I'm instantly, like, my whole body is just like in this hyper-vigilant prep mode of, oh my God, you know, we're going to see accidents left and right and kids flying and, you know, chickens and dogs getting killed, and it's just not necessary. And by the time we got to where we were going, which was about an hour, hour and a half drive, what dawned on me was there wasn't one accident, nor was there one screeching of brake. There was a lot of horn honking, totally different than it's done here. Horn honking over there was a form of communication that people were grateful for. It wasn't a way to be saying, screw you, buddy, get out of my way, move your tush. You know, it truly was a, I'm passing, is it clear? Yeah, yeah, it's clear. And he'd honk back a thank you, and he'd nod, and they'd go around, and here'd be this big truck and this motorcycle full of kids, and I'd be going, oh, I don't want to watch. But what I experienced was the whole time I was there, there was not one accident, even a fender bender. And what I realized about 3 or 4 days into it, and I became mesmerized by it. What I realized was we have legislated our intuition, our spirits, right out the window. We have gotten so rigid and controlling, and this desperate need to make everything perfectly in line with what we think it has to be in order to be okay, to have that illusion for safety and security, that we've legislated our intuition and our sense of what's really going on right out the window. We don't have it. We've lost it. They had it. They were in tune with each other. They just flowed. They knew they'd pull out and they'd know right to come back in, and I think it was clear. And then here comes this big truck. I mean, it was amazing to me. But, you know, we have to have helmets. We can't even ride bicycles now without helmets. You know? What? I don't know. I saw something that really made me look at how much we have clamped down on the true essence of what we are all about, our spirit, our intuition. So when you hear me talk about left brain, that's primarily what our culture is. Left brain is the masculine energy. It is linear thinking. It is rational, reasonable. It's the part of our brain that we need when I sit down to do my checkbook and do my bills. So it's not something we want to throw out. We need the left brain. There's a purpose for why it's there. It's just that we've made the whole brain the left brain, because the right brain is the feminine energy. And that's the power of intuition. That's the power of emotion. It's the power of dreams, inspiration, creativity. It's the unseen, the unformed. And we need the two, and we need them to be in balance with each other. Well, the only way that's going to happen is if we can begin to identify when we're playing around in memory, playing around out here in anticipation, which prevents us from being right here, right now, right in this moment. I'm a woman sitting in a chair. That's it. And as soon as I get the awareness that my brain has spun off and it's doing something else or it's having an argument with somebody, I love it when it pops up and decides to have an argument with one of my ex-husbands who has not been around forever. And boy, I mean, it remembers the details too. You know, it just pulls them all up and it's just like, you know, right here, it's fresh. It's like happened yesterday. And I'm like, are you flipping kidding me? So then I'll go, I'm just a woman standing at the sink doing dishes. Or I'm just a woman walking down the hall towards the bedroom. That's the only thing that's happening right now. And it's an awesome practice because just that statement, just becoming aware, I'm just this person sitting, standing, or lying horizontal. Do it in bed tonight. Because at night, that's the voice of the ego's best time. Wait, oh, I got your full attention. There's nothing else going on. Oh, goody. So, try saying to yourself, I'm just a man or a woman lying in bed. And then get connected to your senses, to your physical touch. Feel the weight of the blankets on your body. Feel the softness of the sheets against your skin, of how the pillow feels with however your head is laying on it. Pay attention to the sound. Close your eyes and try to hear, are there layers of sound? That's what I love to do. I love to listen for layers of sound. Because there's that first layer that you can hear right away. And if I just remain in present and breathing and centered, what happens is I'll hear another layer that's a little more subtle. And I can hear a third layer if I keep it up. And the only reason I don't think there's any other layers is because I fall asleep. Imagine being able to just lay down and within a minute or two be sound asleep. How restful would that be? Oh my gosh. Now, I really wondered if the ego was... I still haven't formed this question yet because I came up with, I wonder if it was trying to sabotage me. It was trying to ambush me, you know, catch me off guard, because I was in meditation, and what I got very clearly was, isn't it amazing how immaturity prances around taking itself so seriously? And when I thought about that statement, I was just like, what was that again? How immaturity, and I know I have lots of levels of immaturity. Trust me, I'm aware of most of them. There's some that I'm not yet because I'm probably not ready to see them. That's okay. So I recognize these areas of my life where there's still this immaturity, and it's true. Those parts of me still take that part of me takes itself so seriously. And isn't that another way to be in memory or anticipation? I'm in memory based on whatever that role, whatever that way of being, behaving, whatever that part of that personality is being up front and center, is believing about itself is about memory. It's about past. It's about a role that's been put together, and it's got to be all focused on that. At the same time, jumping into the future by anticipating what it can get as a result of being in that role. And some of these roles are all, I mean, they're roles that we play. I mean, this is why we come to Disney Earth, okay? So don't get me wrong about that. I think we shouldn't be playing any roles, because we do. I played a role as a wife. I played a role as a mother, as a sister, as a daughter, as a neighbor. Those are roles that have a certain kind of script that go with them. Now, a lot of my problem in some of those roles, I didn't follow the script at all. So, consequently, there was a lot of drama. But even if we are following the script, that's okay if I am willing to look at, it's just a role, and right now I'm in the role of teacher. It's not who I am. I don't have to take it serious. I don't have to get all focused on, oh, well, how should I be and how should I present? Although I have really, I clean up my language a lot for in here. Some of you really know that. partially because this is going on audio and it's out there for everybody to hear. So I know there are younger folks listening and, you know, so. See, that's I'm following the script a little bit better. All right. So, if I'm getting seduced by a part of my personality, and what I mean by that is there's a part of my personality that I'm really liking, or I'm really liking what I get when I'm in that role, that I can use it to manipulate, or that others behave a certain way around me that makes me feel good and it strokes the ego. Okay? There's that ego again. That ego. And when I refer to ego, is I'm not talking to Western psychology's idea of the ego, because I really have come to believe that most counseling and most psychology in terms of that Western psychoanalytical stuff and psychology, all that's about is managing the ego. And, you know, I managed my ego to the nth degree through all kinds of different things, trying to do my roles better, to be in less pain, less emotional pain, less frustration, trying to determine what was happening that was making everything go sideways or felt like it was going sideways. And so I went after lots of things. And what I realized was that all of that really was nothing more than managing the ego, managing this entity, this energy that loves nothing more. Its entire focus is to keep me either in memory or anticipation, in the past or in the future. Again, past or future can be just seconds ago or seconds from now. Okay, here's another example of playing with that. If you want to step out of paradise, because you've got it, you've got paradise right now, if you want it. All you have to do is go into present moment and accept and love everything the way it is right now. That doesn't mean that you aren't going to do things to change it, just like getting stuck in the mud. I wasn't going to sit there and just love on being stuck in the mud. You know, but I loved the richness of the whole situation, because it was right down to the T of what I had kept teaching from, right? It was at night, it was cold, it was raining, and I was stuck in the mud. That car was not going forward or backward, period. So, any dislike of the situation would have been absolutely of no use to me. It would have wasted my energy. It would have wasted my time. Let me get more specific. It would have aged me, because then I would have been stressed, which causes inflammation in the body, which ages the body. So at least I know of one stressful situation I was in that wasn't stressful, and I got to go through being stuck in the mud, and I didn't have to age. I know, that sounds whacked, but I am. So the deal with being able to look at where I am is truly recognition of how the ego, literally, its whole goal is to keep you out of present moment. Why? Because when people ask me, how do I get rid of the ego? How do I fight the ego? One, you don't fight it. That's resistance. What you resist persists. Okay? I have a student who came up. She said, I need to have the opposite of that, Karen. So what you embrace, you erase. And I like that too. So either one, whatever works for you. What you resist persists, or what you embrace, you erase. Doesn't matter. Either way, it's truth. Because the ego cannot exist in present moment. As soon as you step into present moment, it's not there. That's all you have to do. Get present. And ego is not there. The voice of the ego, the voice in your head that's arguing with somebody that's not there, that is bringing up past stuff so you can feel guilty, feel shame. I don't know about you, but I've experienced being in the house by myself. I mean, the cats were there, but you know, they just look at me and go, yeah, okay, there she goes again. And bottom line is, what would happen is I would be in the past about something, and I'd be remembering something, and it would bring up embarrassment or guilt, and I would have this huge shame attack. And a shame attack is literally where you are pulling all that energy from your body that is still sitting in there because it keeps getting fed. Because you keep believing it's real. You keep going there and thinking about it. You keep going there and wishing it could be different. And to me, that really is what the job of the ego is, because then it keeps its existence. It can stay alive. And anything that is of its own energy, to me, is, you know, you want to use a woo-woo word, we can call it an entity. You're an entity, for that matter. You know, you're a complex form of energy that has come together and become deformed. Okay? And you've all heard me say, the flip side of that spiritual paradox is that Einstein says, the biggest illusion we have is that there's more than one of us. I love that. Because that means all of you are projections of myself. I'm projecting all of what goes on in here that I cannot see myself out there so I can see it. But therein lies the illusion. See, I think it's separate from me. So I judge it. I resist it. I'm either attached to it or I'm trying to detach from it. And it's all me. It's all me. Okay, before I go any further, I want to go ahead and at this point open up for questions and for comments. I haven't seen you in ages. Questions? Questions? Comments? Come on, people. Or we could go into talking about, are we operating out of fear or are we operating out of love? It's really only those two things. We talk about anger and hurt and disappointment and all the joy and la-la and fra-la and all this other stuff. And bottom line is, it all boils down to we're operating out of fear or operating out of love. Very simple. No, the ego is always going to go to fear.
It's always going to
fear. Yeah. Love is where present moment is. That's what real love is. Real love is in present moment. Okay? It's like right here, right now. That's what love is. Here's something to think about. The love that we get fed in the secular society is not love. The romantic love, the la-la love, the oh, I love you, the you know, bottom line is, what that is I want you. I'm an ego that wants something from you. You do something for me. You make me feel good, so I want more of that. I want you in my life. And it's not okay that you're not in my life. That's what our version of love is. Because real love is, I love you enough to let you go. I love you enough to want you to be happy, to do whatever it is you want to do. If you want to stay, I'm thrilled. If you don't, that's fine. I love you. I want you to be happy. But the most of what I hear about in this culture, what I hear from most of my students and clients that I'm working with, it's, I love him. He has to stay here with me. I love her. She can't go anywhere. She has to be mine. And the thing that even gets me even more is that I want you, I want you, I want you. And then when they get them, they treat them like garbage. I think the ego has really fell off its nut in that department. Okay? Okay, in Spanish, they say it a lot more honest. When they say, I love you, most of the time they say, te quiero. Which really means, which really, truly translates to, I want you. They rarely say, te amo. Which is that true love, that unconditional love, that I love you enough that I want whatever you want for yourself. And no, it's not about if you walk away, I'm going to be a martyr. Oh, my God. I just don't know if I can survive it. It'll be more like when you walk away, I rejoice in the fact that you're safe enough with me to be who you are. That the love is real enough between us that you will do what you need to do for you. That's real love. But we don't have that here. Okay? All you have to do is watch movies, listen to the radio, watch television. Even most stories are all about the, I mean, and I don't care how sophisticated and intellectual and brilliant the writers are. Most of the time, it is still the same melodramatic angst of the 13-year-old. Oh, that's where that's coming from. The immaturity that takes itself so seriously. Say? Yes, absolutely. He actually had some pretty spiritual stuff. Yeah. He was pretty awesome. So that would be another practice that you could play with. You know, is one practice is to look at, am I bouncing around in memory? Am I bouncing around in anticipation? And I started to talk about that and went down another rabbit hole. So I'll come back to it. What I was doing with the whole anticipation thing, and what I was talking about my practice in the last 6 months has been, was to really pay attention to when I'm saying, I'm so looking forward to, even when I'm typing an email to somebody, I'm so looking forward to da 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 da, or I'm all excited about when I was going to go to Chicago, I'm all excited about my trip to Chicago. Well, and I'd stop and think, boy, that's just such a habit that stuff just comes right out of my mouth and I'm not even, and it's not the truth, because I'm not there, I'm here. Now, does it mean I wasn't happy when I was in Chicago to be with my son and my daughter-in-law and my grandkids? No, it wasn't true about that at all. It's just that while I was here, I was here. And I found that I still habitually was using the same phrases and the same words that we are ingrained with from the time we're born here. And that somehow if we don't say those things, it makes us insensitive. It makes us cold. There's something wrong with us. Yes, exactly. And so if, and that becomes then another piece of that spiritual practice is to be able to, the practice of, and this is Don Miguel Ruiz's work, The Four Agreements, don't take anything personal. So that when somebody is judging me and saying, oh, well, you're just really cold, or you're on drugs, that, okay, is that so? Premeditated resentments,
yeah.
Yes. And it was fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. It becomes an effortless way of living. It really does. It just, the way that I live today, for the most part, takes no effort at all. None. But that's a good thing. I mean, somebody else. Talked about it, how important it is to lose your mind on the way to God. Now, I pick that apart a little bit because the word God has been so overused in our culture that we see this separate entity from us. And again, there's the illusion that we're separate from Source. Okay? And most of you who know me and have been to this before, you know what I believe about that, and that it's a part of quantum physics. It's the unified field. So we're all God. And the space in between us is God, and the chairs are God, and this building is God. I mean, there is nothing that God is not. Whether you call it God, whether you call it the unified field, whether you call it energy, I don't care what you call it. Source, spirit, tra-la-la-da-la-la. Those are just words. They're noises we make with our mouth, you know? That's why I really don't have trouble with the words that everybody doesn't like to hear, because to me they're just noises, and I like some of them. So, not that rabbit hole. We won't go there. Okay. Thank you for stopping me. All right. So God, energy, unified field, source, is either everything or nothing. It doesn't get to be, this is God, this is love, this is source, this isn't. Yeah, no. Yeah, although there's a whole lot of folks out there who think there is. Until something throws a monkey wrench into their belief system. Well, yeah, that's all going on. If you're into a religion that believes that stuff, yeah, you're going to bounce back and forth between memory and anticipation. You're not ever going to be in present moment, which, that was the other rabbit hole I forgot to... Oh, I missed that one too, didn't I? All right. So the practice... Thank you, Earl. I appreciate it. You tried. I know. My mind is like trying to nail Jell-O to a tree. It just, yeah. Okay. So here we go. So I've been really working on trying not to use those words, trying to be more aware of my speech. Okay, so that's kind of the end of that thing. Now the other, oh, I just lost it. Never mind. It'll pop back up. It's sort of like whack-a-mole, you know? Oh, I love it. Isn't it fun? Because, you know, we're really making all this up. You know, you talk to a quantum physicist and they'll prove to you we're making all this up all the time. You know, that's why I posted the other day on Heart Wide Open's thing on Facebook. You're making it up. So pretend something different. If you don't like what's going on, pretend something different. Rewrite the rules. Rewrite the rules. Be willing to step out of this box that you have put yourself in. And when I say that a lot of times to people, I'll get, oh, I didn't put myself there. This is how I got raised. This is what I got taught. Okay, now you're in the box of victim. And you can fight for your right to stay there, or you can say, screw it all. I'm jumping out of the box. To do something different. Yeah, because the brain is nothing more. I forget his first name. Dr. Diogi. And I know I'm not saying his last name right, but there's a whole bunch of letters in there that just really jumble up in my head. And so when I look at it, I always just say Diogi, but I know that's not how it's pronounced. He wrote a book called The Brain That Changes Itself. And he talks about in there the plasticity of the brain and how they used to believe that when there was brain damage, it was permanent. It's not. And brain cells come back. And they have proven, he's done research that has proven things like the eyeball. I mean, think about the eyeball. The eyeball itself is not what sees. If you know anything about physiology, the eyeball is what takes in the image for the brain to see. And so they have literally created mechanisms. Of course, they're a long ways off before the general public is going to have access to them because of the amount of the stuff involved and the money involved and blah, 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 snore. But bottom line is they've created apparatus that a blind person can literally wear that registers what the brain needs, requires in order to actually see. Is that not phenomenal? There was a case study in there of a woman who had a lot of vestibular damage in her ear, and there was a disease or something, a situation that they had a name for, and it was one of those really long terms. So of course, I just went ahead, screw that. But what it was that she was losing her ability to not be dizzy in any setting, sitting down, lying down, standing up, anything like that. So that she eventually lost her job. She couldn't drive. She couldn't do anything. She basically was becoming totally handicapped, so to speak, because she couldn't stand up, she couldn't walk. Her body was battered and bruised from falling down, walking into things, all kinds of stuff. And this guy created this mouthpiece that literally she hooked it up to the roof of her mouth, and I don't remember all the details of it, but she didn't have to wear it all the time. They started out with like 30 minutes out of every 3 hours or something like that. And they figured that's what she would have to do the rest of her life in order to function because it straightened everything out in her brain. Okay. Well, after just a few months of that, she didn't use it at all. It had completely changed. And that's when they began to realize this thing that they now are referring to as the plasticity of the brain. It can be melded and molded and moved and changed. That's what all the whole thing around process addictions are about. We know all about substance addictions. We know that it alters the brain chemistry and the body adapts to that substance, whether it's nicotine, whether it's sugar, whether it's heroin, cocaine, THC from pot, doesn't matter. Okay? So it adjusts and adapts to that. You take it away, and other than THC, which is a fast soluble chemical, the water soluble chemicals get flushed out of the system within 24 hours and you have withdrawal symptoms. And they go, okay, well, that makes sense. You were ingesting something, your body no longer has it available, and now it's going, wait a minute, where is it? And it throws out symptoms to let you know it's missing that substance. Well, then they began to realize and register the physical symptoms of withdrawal from process addictions, like relationship addiction, co-addiction, love addiction, avoidance addiction, gambling, work addiction, sex addiction in all of its forms, money addiction in both misering and overspending, food addiction in all of its forms. And when you stop that process, the person would experience these withdrawal symptoms. And they thought, how is this happening? Until they began to realize the plasticity of the brain. There's a neuron track that gets laid down in the brain for a particular behavior. And when you compulsively and obsessively do that behavior over and over and over and over, and chemicals from the brain, not outside that you've ingested, get dumped into that neuron track, you get relief when you do that behavior. Even if all it is every morning I got to jump on the internet and play Scrabble or whatever. You know, I've got people that say, I can't wake up in the morning without my coffee and my solitaire game. Okay. All righty then. But that's what they're telling me. They've created a neuron track and there are certain chemicals that get dumped. If they don't do that, what's going to happen? The body is not, that neuron track is not getting what it's used to on a certain cycle. And so it goes into physical withdrawal. And you feel, you see people get agitated, irritable, they're out of sorts, they're all of a sudden acting like they got ADD, or ADHD, they're hyperactive and they can't pay attention for the love of anything. You know, and it's because the neuron track is not getting the dump of chemicals that it requires. So it's in withdrawal. It's just a different form. Okay? So that was another rabbit hole, wasn't it? Never know what's going to come out in these things. Yeah, they are. Yeah. Okay. Any questions now? Mm-hmm. One, you have to be in present moment. You've got to get, yeah, what the best way, the question was, what is the best way to change that neuron track? Okay, which is to play with the plasticity of the brain, is what you're saying, is to get into present moment, is to remind, is if you're right here, right now, I even do this with people that have got physical pain. What I'll tell people to do that have got a lot of physical pain going on, and I've worked with people that are dealing with pancreatic cancer. I've worked with pancreatic cancer, liver cancer, stomach cancer, where, and especially if they're doing chemo and they have to take Neupogen shots. Neupogen shots is the medicine that forces the bone marrow in the femur and the sternum. Thank you. I'm so glad you're here, Earl. it forces those main bones, because they're the biggest ones, to mass produce white blood cells, because the chemo strips that and you're susceptible to every kind of bug that's floating around. Okay? So the Neupogen forces those bones to massively produce that, and in so doing, they're really painful. It's really painful. It's extremely painful. And think about really, really sharp, deep pain in down in your bones. I mean, you can't, how do you get there? And what I've done with people is let's go into the pain. Let's not go away from it. That's resistance. Go into it. So even if it's about an addiction and you're stopping the behavior and moving into the symptomology of the withdrawal, you go into those symptoms, whatever those are. And you allow yourself to be with that experience. Go in and feel it. I have people do that with emotions. When they're heartbroken, when they're so angry they can't see straight, when they're scared to death and terrified, I'll say, where are you feeling that in your body? I'm feeling it right here in my heart. I'm feeling it in my stomach. I'm feeling it in my legs. In fact, they're just like vibrating. Or I feel it in my throat. Okay, then let's go there. Let's go. Go in. Close your eyes. Go in and be with that. Breathe into it. And it'll be amazing because I will hear things like, oh my gosh, Karen, there's space around it. This hurts a little, but it's nothing really. I could do this. And yet they were in agony. Part of it comes from the anticipation. Part of it comes from the memory. We all have experienced physical pain. And especially when you're going through something like chemo, of course, they're really good about letting you know all the stuff you're going to feel, right? You know, you're going to feel tons of pain. You're going to do this. So now you anticipate all that. Or if you have felt intense pain and you've, you know, with every treatment, you have to have Neupogen shots. So you've had them once. So the memory is, here it comes. It's going to happen again. And that's where the ego has you, rather than being in present moment. So yeah, absolutely. You get into present moment and you sit with those symptoms of that withdrawal. And you be with it. And you be with the agitation. What is that where am I feeling that in my body? What is the physical, excuse me, the physical sensation? What am I experiencing there? And sit with it. Be with it. Breathe into it. And I promise you, you will blow your mind about what happens to it. Do it with a headache the next time you have a headache, for those of you that get headaches. You know, for those of you that have low back pain, for those of you that are dealing with any kind of physical issue that causes you discomfort and pain, practice relaxing into it. The non-resistance literally shifts it. And to be able to be non-resistant, you have to be present. You absolutely have to be present. Any other questions? Before I go down another rabbit hole? No? Waiting for it? Oh, I didn't? Well, love is what's real. Love is what's in present moment. So the real love, and that, oh, you're right, I didn't. I went off onto the, okay. The rabbit hole was that when we're in what we think is love, we're in want. No, most people don't really love each other. Their personalities wanting something from each other. You know? And maybe I can say that I really love all those wonderful good things about you, but I really don't want to look at those things I don't like about you because they irritate me. Okay, so here's the paradox to that. One of the things I do when I work with couples, a lot of times couples will come to me before they get married or before they start living with each other because they want to, you know, kind of do some work beforehand. Oh my gosh, what a concept. And one of the things that I have them do is I have them come up with a whole list of stuff that irritates the heck out of them about the other person. It's not to share with the other person. And no, don't you dare leave that list around where they might find it. Yes. Yeah, that's beyond a Freudian slip. That's called manipulation. Plain and simple. All right. So you make this list, and they would both come in, and they'd have their lists in front of them, and they'd be thinking, oh, boy, I get to really tell him. Oh, yeah, I get to tell her. This is the stuff that just really irritates me. And yeah. I'm good, aren't I? So what happens is I will tell them, look at that list. Read it in your mind, not out loud. Watch him, watch her do each one of those things. Okay, now close your eyes. The doorbell rings. You open the door, it's a police officer. And he's regretfully telling you, your partner died in a car accident that night. What do you think you're going to miss? You're going to walk back in the bathroom and you're going to wish his wet bath towel was there. You're going to wish her stockings were hanging over the shower. You're going to wish the toothpaste tube was sitting there half leaking out, no lid on it. Because the fact that it's not is a reminder that they are not. Those are the things that you'll actually end up missing. Okay, so fear is always illusion. In the 12-step programs, they talk about fear, they use it as an anagram and say false evidence appearing real. So it's saying right there, it's not real. It's an illusion. I can have fear that I won't make enough money this month to make my house payment. And what does that actually do for me? Does it bring in the dollars? Does it make my house payment? No. In fact, it might actually even make me behave in such a way that I constrict the flow of what could be coming towards me because I'm behaving differently. I'm coming from this negative, shadowy place. Okay? So, and that's why I really do believe that when we look at anger. We got 4 minutes. What the heck? I'm quick. Rabbits are fast, you know. Okay, so anger really is nothing more. I hear people all the time say, well, I finally got angry, and I'm going, oh, whoop. Okay. All you've done is moved into a secondary emotion. Okay? Because this is a secondary emotion under which there is either fear or hurt. And hurt really is about fear. And if we were to take a look at fear, it's one of two things. All the time. Every time. There's nothing you can't present to me that I can't show you how it doesn't work. So it's either fear of losing what I have, or not getting what I want. And that can be anything. Okay? So, if fear always boils down to that, that always has me in memory or anticipation. It's always about that. And love is the only thing we can truly experience right here, right now. The true deal. There's nothing but that. In a way, love is the emotion or the energy that is this thinking stuff that we call God or that we call Source or we call Spirit, the unified field. Doesn't matter what you call it. For a long time, I called my higher power enough. Because we live in a culture that tells us we're not enough. We don't have enough. We don't make enough. My house isn't big enough. It's not good enough. My car isn't fast enough. You know, my husband wasn't handsome enough. Your wife isn't beautiful enough. Your kids don't listen to you enough. You know, enough. All the stuff around love, approval, and appreciation. Yeah, so that's when we start being dishonest. We start, you know, and that's, you know, that's the one when I did the whole thing around the white lies that we tell for love, approval, and appreciation. You know? So it's just one big, huge minefield that we bounce around in, and we don't have to. That's all I need. Yeah. And that was when I was doing the thing around the whole belief that people have around not having enough money. And I'd say, you don't have enough, you need more money. Is that true? Yeah. That's what I'd always hear. And I go, right now, in this moment, you need more money. Yes, absolutely. Right now, sitting in that chair, you need more money. Because now, this moment right here is all there is. And if you can keep yourself present, that was the other thing I was going to say that I lost. Thank you, Earl. And that is, you want to move out of paradise? Right where you are right now is perfection. Until the voice of the ego tells you something isn't right. It's too hot, or it's too muggy, or I'm too tired, or my butt is sore and I need a softer chair, or I wish I could stand, or I wish the lights were dimmer, or I wish there was more light, or. You know, what that's always about is the ego moving you out of paradise, because you got paradise when you can be in just this moment right now. Okay, I'm going to close this with the Lord's Prayer, not the Christian version. This is the one that is the Aramaic directly to present-day English rather than from Aramaic to Greek to Latin to 50 million forms of English to present-day English to where, you know, it's like playing telephone. By the time it gets around the circle, it's like, really? That's what I said? Okay. O cosmic birther of all radiance and vibration, soften the ground of our being and carve out a space within us where your presence can abide. Fill us with your creativity so that we may be empowered to bear the fruit of your mission. Let each of our actions bear fruit in accordance with our desire. Endow us with the wisdom to produce and share what each being needs to grow and flourish. Untie the tangled threads of destiny that bind us as we release others from the entanglements of past mistakes. Do not let us be seduced by that which would divert us from our true purpose, but illuminate the opportunities of the present moment. For you are the ground and the fruitful vision, the birth power and fulfillment as all is gathered and made whole again. Oh, thank you very much.